This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Every time you flip on your lights in North Carolina, odds are you have Duke Energy to thank. And you do thank them every month with your payment, a payment that contributed to a nearly $3 billion profit last year. And if you think you're paying too much or you don't like the way Duke makes electricity, there's not much you can do about it since Duke Energy is a regulated monopoly. A pair of unlikely partners have teamed up to question whether the energy giant should retain that status. The conservative John Locke Foundation and liberal environmental group NC Warren are calling for increased competition in the power industry. And they're going to hold a public forum tomorrow afternoon at the Doubletree Brownstone Inn in Raleigh. And we're going to get a little preview right now from NC Warren's executive director, Jim Warren. Jim, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for doing the show.
Sure thing. John Sanders is here as well. He's John Locke Foundation's Director of Regulatory Studies. John Sanders, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. I'm glad to be here.
Well, why did John Locke decide to team up with NC Warren on this? Why is this important to you?
Well, in our in talking with Pete McDowell over at NC Warren in the last year or two, I've realized that we had some things in common with our concerns about competition and pricing in the electricity market here in North Carolina.
And, of course, Duke Energy is a regulated monopoly, and there's a reason for that, Jim, right? I mean, there was a time when we understood, even in a market economy, that certain industries wouldn't benefit all of us by being, you know, sort of wide-open competition. Telephone business, a long time ago when we used to string lines, and the power industry. So tell us about regulated monopoly and the theory behind it. There's a good reason for that, right?
Well, there is a long history, and you described part of it. I mean, the way it plays out these days in a very rapidly changing marketplace is that the monopoly, a key element of the monopoly situation is that Duke Energy gets a guaranteed very large profit and is sort of granted a less scrutiny from the public and the state government than we feel they should in terms of their business model, which is at this in this day and age to continue building large centralized power plants and charging ratepayers for them over and over again. And we have contended, NC Warren, that these are power plants that are not needed, and that Duke Energy should be really positioning itself to join a very rapidly emerging clean energy revolution and to stop with this situation that is harming small business, is harming the state economy, is harming families, especially people with low and fixed incomes, and that we should be moving toward a more competitive marketplace and allowing a lot of these companies who renewable companies and some traditional companies that want to get into the North Carolina marketplace, and we should be welcoming them.
Well, I want to take issue with something you said, because I'm guessing if Duke Energy, and by the way, I should point out that we invited a representative from Duke Energy to be on this program, and they said, quote, it's not our fight. We don't see ourselves in any part of this conversation. So they are big, they are a monopoly, and they don't think they need to be part of this conversation. But I bet what they would say when Jim said they have less standards, there's less scrutiny. They might argue that we're well scrutinized. Every time we ask for a rate increase, we have to open our books. We go to a public utilities commission, and everybody sees what we make, what it costs to run this company. And it's better to have one company than 1,000 companies running power lines all over the place and crisscrossing the state. John, am I right about that? I mean, there is some scrutiny in their books and in their rate with their rate requests, right?
Well, there is scrutiny. However, with respect to the power lines running everywhere, the concern that there would be, you know, hundreds, thousands of different power companies, I don't know about that. But I would be interested in seeing more types of competition, more choices in electricity provision. There were polls done last year by the Sustainable Energy Association and the Civitas Institute that both found that people would prefer more choice. Civitas, which is, you know, conservative, found a large plurality of people saying that they'd be interested even in paying more for renewable energy. However, they didn't want it forced on them, which is what happens in the RPS.
The RPS.
I'm sorry, the Renewable Portfolio Standards in North Carolina.
Right.
slipped into inside baseball talk there for a second.
That's fine.
But essentially, I think that people in North Carolina would prefer to have more choices, and I'm not sure what kind of choices they would end up getting. I do see, you know, distributed generation as being one of the interesting things.
Meaning what?
People being able to install solar in their house, for example, or businesses being able to do their own kind of solar generation, or, for example, hog waste farms or groups that have access to a certain kind of energy source that may not make money or make sense for others, but because of their unique situations that they would be able to generate on their own and maybe able. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask Jim, aren't we able to generate our own? Can I put a solar panel on my roof? What stops me?
Well, it's a little complicated when you have a monopoly utility, and especially one that wields so much and an inordinate amount of leverage over state government at various levels. The earlier segment was talking about criticisms of Diener. N.C. Warren has had similar criticisms of the North Carolina Utilities Commission over a long period of time. Lack of transparency, too cozy with Duke Energy. But at this point, the industry is moving toward distributed energy, and that could be solar rooftop. But Duke Energy has various programs and efforts underway right now to stifle solar energy, even while they've done a prodigious job in greenwashing the corporate image over time and making people think that they really support solar. But photovoltaic solar is growing very rapidly. Prices have come down 80% in recent years. There are big companies that are trying to come into North Carolina. They have models, financing models that install solar for free on business and home rooftops, and Duke is blocking that effort.
How so? How does that work?
Well, they have legislation in place that prevents that model from working here. It's technically called third-party sales. It's an issue. It's succeeding in lots of other states, and it seems inevitable that it's going to be coming to North Carolina, too. We have legislators on both sides of the aisle who support this idea that Duke should not be able to control what people do on their own property.
Well, I'm going to stop you there for 1 minute. I'm going to ask John this question because it's kind of interesting, because what you said is they're acting as a big lobbyist. They're not acting as Duke Energy, the power producer, but because they're a $50 billion corporation and provide all the power to this company, the state. When they go to the legislature, I guess they have voice. That's two different things, though, isn't it, John? I mean, to one extent, that doesn't mean give us more choice. That somehow means, what, limiting the voice of – how are they related? How is Duke's monopoly status related to its effort as a lobbyist to keep out competitors who would come in here and think they can make money?
Well, I mean, they're able to leverage their size and influence. I mean, my concern is state policy and what I think would be most beneficial for everyone in the state. Electricity is a staple, is a household necessity. So it's not something that you can reward your family with if you were able to budget well this week. And because electricity has gone up and up in prices, in retail prices, the consumer level, it's taking more and more of a portion of poor people's budgets, depending on if you're at the poverty level or just above. You know, you're talking it's 10 to 35% of your family income possibly. So that's a huge hit to your budget. So that's why I favor competition, because competition has a way of depressing prices, has a way of pushing entrepreneurs to finding new things. I'm, for example, interested to see what's going to happen when we are able to tap natural gas. What are we able to do if we're able to get maybe smaller natural gas distributing and, you know, energy from that? I don't know what's going to happen in the next few years, but I would like to see a system where we haven't lock them out immediately.
So what would it take, Jim, what would that competition look like from a statutory standpoint? What does it mean we would have to do? And then, you know, what would this state look like in terms of competition? What would I as a consumer be looking at once we've made those regulatory and statutory changes?
Yeah, one of the keys would be this third-party sales issue. Third-party solar, it could be other technologies as well. And by the way, part of what's happening with distributed generation is companies such as NRG in the Northeast that are coal-owning companies that are moving very rapidly toward a point where people can use micro-generation on their own, at their own home and business. Some of that will be PV solar. Some of it may be backed up with small natural gas micro-generators. Battery storage is advancing quite rapidly in the marketplace. That's going to be part of the picture here, too. So we're heading toward, as Duke Energy's own very luminous CEO, recently retired, but still the industry's leading voice, Jim Rogers, he is acknowledging that this transformation is underway, is happening quite rapidly, and people are going to be increasingly disconnecting from the electricity grid. It's been called a corporate death spiral because the industry's own trade group, Edison Electric Institute, has warned basically if these monopoly companies don't evolve, they're going to go the way of Kodak. And but it would be people disconnecting from the grid.
What, John, what would that look like, again, in terms of competition? So the first thing we would do is say that Duke no longer has a monopoly. Does that mean that we no longer regulate the power industry? And because there have been disasters in deregulation as well.
Well, then, you know, that concerns a long way down the line. I mean, what we're talking about here is one, with the forums, is getting conversation started on bringing in more freedom and liberalization in the industry. So we're talking about things around the edge on the margins right now, so such as, you know, third-party sales.
And so what that means is simply allowing it, getting legislation that blocks it now out of the way so that these others can come in. You wouldn't have to change Duke status at all, right, under those circumstances, just simply allow these others in.
Right.
And what about so you mentioned natural gas, and of course that can be controversial because if you talk about natural gas, you think about fracking, and then you think about the environmental consequences, and so that raises this other question. And when Duke goes to the Energy Commission and it asks for a rate increase, it talks about its cost, but on the books, one cost that isn't there is the social cost. Any of the environmental costs due to coal ash and coal air pollution, that's a social cost. We all pay that. Are we going to have to be more transparent and more honest about the costs and the benefits of energy transmission before we start talking about changing the status of a company like Duke?
Well, if you get into something like that, you would have to be very careful as to how you compute those costs, how you study them. And so the first thing I would want to do is to make sure that these studies are well vetted and actually are documenting actual costs instead of potential or theoretical costs.
Yeah. And Frank, there's another side to this whole question of monopoly and competition that we will be touching on more in the second forum between NC Warren and the John Locke Foundation. And that's going to be on March 20th. And it's this question that's been in play for several years in North Carolina that's has several different names. It's legislation that forces customers to take the enormous financial risks by beginning to pay for construction of nuclear power plants years in advance before the plants are built, and even if the project is canceled. And that's not a hypothetical, because that just happened in Florida, where Duke Energy, after investing $1.5 billion, they canceled plans to build two nuclear reactors, and the Florida ratepayers are stuck with the price tag because of legislation that's variously called construction work in process. It's also called advanced nuclear payment. NC Warren works with a coalition of folks that call it the annual rate hike bill, because Duke Energy got partial QIP legislation in 07, but they have very publicly emphasized they will not and cannot try to build nuclear plants unless they get the second part of QIP, which basically would allow them an annual rate hike with very little scrutiny by the state or the public. And It's just something that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, interestingly
enough, if we go that way.
The reason that ratepayers are asked to pay for those nuclear plants is because Wall Street won't touch them. So again, if you're looking at market mechanisms, it is utterly disabled in socializing the risk of building a plant because Wall Street says, I'm not paying for no nuclear plant. They're too risky. We're not going to take it on. So again, I think, is this one of the problems of monopoly control is that you're not really, you're disabling many of the market mechanisms.
Well, I think definitely, yes. It's also a problem of basically government regulation. The Energy Policy Act 2005 basically put in play, I think it was 80% of loan guarantees for new nuclear plants. And it's something that, for example, conservatives have been very much in favor of. We want more nuclear. Nuclear is very clean. It's the most efficient energy source. It is unfortunately one of the most expensive and risky ones to build. So even with those loan guarantees already on the books, Wall Street investment firms basically said, look, we're not willing to get involved unless we can get close to 100%. And that's what the construction work in progress bills do. Now, it's not just something that affects Duke. I mean, it's in other parts of the country as well, and other utility companies are able to take advantage of it. However, what they do is and the theory behind it is that we pay for it now, then utilities aren't socked. I mean, ratepayers aren't socked with big bills after the utility comes online. Problem is, the plants aren't coming online. It's a very risky situation. They may not even come online, and then you're paying for nothing.
Right, and then the moral hazard of being guaranteed the investment without having, you know, so if it doesn't come online, that's a moral hazard. And again, in those guaranteed loans, you have the government essentially picking a winner, which I know is not a thing conservatives like government to do. But I want to ask you this question. If we suddenly open the field to more competition, does the government have a responsibility to do something to level the field that has become distorted because of the historic monopoly control? Should there be incentives, this is the direct question, for renewable energy, given the fact that monopoly control has unfairly pushed that market to the margins? John?
In my opinion, no, there should not be, because if we want them to compete, then we cannot – it doesn't matter which energy source it is. If we want it to be competitive in a competitive marketplace environment, then we can't be giving it a crutch.
But are we compensating for the market control that Duke got under, as in its monopoly status, which it's still going to enjoy if we change the rules? Right.
Right. I mean, Duke is not just getting energy from one source at all. So, no, I think that would be the same problem. It would just be moving. It would just be moving the incentives around.
Jim?
Might be noteworthy that Duke Energy received an $80 million federal subsidy for opening their Cliffside coal-fired power plant a year or so ago. And so they benefit from the subsidies. There are a lot of subsidies at the federal and the state level. I think that we're seeing a situation where if you took all the subsidies, if you could even identify all of them, if you took them all off the table, I feel confident that energy-saving programs and renewables will compete quite well, especially compared with the price per kilowatt hour if anyone ever gets a new nuclear power plant opened. But in the Midwest and in the West, wind energy is being sold for cheaper than natural gas power is even being sold. So we don't have a level playing field.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being on the program and look forward to your conversation tomorrow. Jim Warren is Executive Director of NC Warren. John Sanders is John Locke Foundation's Director of Regulatory Studies. And they are going to hold a forum tomorrow. Where are you going to be? Where's the forum tomorrow?
At the Brownstone Inn in Raleigh.
Raleigh.
Brownstone.
What time is that?
At 4:30.
4:30. So you can hear more on this conversation, and you can participate if you want to show up tomorrow in Raleigh, and we'll have that information on our website. Just ahead, when they say time flies when you're having fun, are we really having fun, and how far and how fast does time really fly? We'll talk about our perceptions of time in the modern age when we continue on The State of Things. Stay tuned.